Welcome to Gracious Words. Gracious Words is taken from the weekly women's Bible study taught by Cheryl Broderson at Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.
We behold your glory, God, in the face of Christ. It shows us who you are.
On today's program, we'll see how Jacob and his family must flee from Laban. The way ahead looks intimidating, dangerous, and unknown, but God's presence and power is with them. Here is part two of Cheryl's message titled, The Way Forward.
While he's putting everyone on camels, Rachel sneaks back to her father's tent while Laban is shearing the sheep and takes the household idols. She's so upset that she hasn't received the rightful inheritance she feels she's entitled to. Now, this might be a protective measure, like if I get rid of his idols, he can't hurt us. Or maybe she thought, you know, my dad will be powerless without his idols. He never goes anywhere without his idols unless he's shearing sheep. And that he wouldn't be able to divine where they were or when they had left. Or maybe she's taking them because they're valuable, silver and gold. Or maybe she's taking them because they also, in those days, often if you were buying property, you got the idol of the property because people associated the gods with particular areas or land. All of these are possible. Any of these, all of these, it could be D, all of the above, or E, you missed it. Joseph successfully pulls up camp and makes his way to the mountains of Gilead. Laban finds out 3 days later, and he has a 7-day pursuit. I mean, 7 days. He's gonna get to Jacob. But during that time, he has a dream, verse 29. And God comes to Laban at night and says, be careful that you speak to Jacob neither good nor bad. It's like God says, you're not doing anything. You know, I don't even want you speaking good or bad to him, let alone touching him. In other words, don't try to coax or bribe him to come back. Don't threaten him. Don't try to intimidate him. Do not try to be any influence at all on Jacob. This dream that Laban has is reminiscent of the dream that God gave Abimelech concerning Abraham and Sarah. In Genesis 23, God said to Abimelech, indeed, you are a dead man because of the woman whom you have taken. She is a man's wife. God put the fear of himself in Abimelech through a dream, and now he puts that same fear in Laban and on Laban. Laban has nothing he can hold against Jacob. He can't say, well, you cheated me out of this, because it's Laban who's done the cheating. All he's got on Jacob is the household gods. Jacob tells Laban, you search. Go ahead. If you find them, you have the right to take it back and to punish whoever has them. Now, I find it interesting that Laban goes first to Jacob's tent. He's sure it's Jacob. I'll get that guy. He's taken my idols. But there's no gods in that tent. Then he goes to Leah's tent. Yeah, I never trusted her. I had to get rid of her anyway. That'll, you know. Goes to Leah's tent. No idols. Then he goes to the maid's tents. Then it's got to be, you know, Bilhah or Zilpah. Nope. And then last, I think the most unsuspecting person would have been Rachel. I think Rachel was probably the most like Laban. And so he goes in there, and there she is. Obviously, she's got that deceit gene because she's sitting on the idols, and she says, you'll have to excuse me. Mm-hmm. Woman time. And you know how men are. God gave that to us as a protection. Rachel is sitting on these idols. So obviously, she does not have any respect for them. She would not make this claim if she respected them at all. But she is hiding them, and she's not going to give them back. God then closes the door to any return for Jacob or his wives to Padan Aram. He closes the door. We all hate closed doors, don't we? We like to keep all our options open. If you're anything like me, we like every option open. You know, we like to let's make a deal. There are three doors. Which one do you want? Oh, I don't know. Can we just stay here forever and just have the possibilities? You know how hard it is for somebody to choose? Oh, I don't know. Which door? Because you don't want the other two doors closed. Because one of them might have the car. You know, you want to keep all your options open. You know, my dog, Barnabas, hates closed doors. I'm just telling you, just so you can know. Barnabas, the great big black golden doodle, he hates closed doors. So we got, because golden doodles, I read this article that you could get a set of bells on your door, and they'll ring the bells instead of going, whoa, whoa. So we've got the bells on the door. And the dog goes over in the morning. Brian and I get up, we're reading our Bibles, and the dog's just sleeping like, you guys again? And sometimes he leaves the room because he doesn't like the lights on. Then he comes back, he does downward dog, he's into yoga, and he comes over and he sets his head on one and sets his head on the other of us, and then he goes over and he starts ringing the bells and looks at us. And so one of us has to get up and we open the door, and the screen is broken so he can just go in and out. It came out, you know, of the frame, but just a flap of it. And we thought about fixing it, but it kind of makes a really good dog door. So he goes out. It's only been like that since we've had him, so it's only 4 years. So he goes out. He goes out and, you know, he lays in front of the open door. He just lays outside in front of it. Now, the minute we begin to close the door, he jumps up and he comes in. And he goes over and he lays on his bed. So Brian closes the door because it's cold, right? It's like 50 degrees outside and, you know. He goes over to the pillow. As soon as Brian closes the door, guess what he does? Gets up and rings those dratted bells. So we let him out. He goes, he sits there. And so Brian goes to close the door. He jumps up. Don't you close that door. Then he comes in. Then he sits over on the pillow. Brian closes the door. He goes over, rings. And Brian's like, don't you try this with me. You get over on that pillow. He's like, gets on the pillow, he sits. You could kind of see him, he's like this, and he's thinking. Then he gets up, like, I've given him enough time. I'm going back to the bells. He simply wants the door left open. You know, that's how we are, aren't we? And we're just like, don't close this door, Lord. I'll just sit as close as I can to this open door. Just please don't close this door. But God will close the door so we don't turn back. In fact, it said that he parted the Red Sea for the children of Israel to walk through, then drowned the Egyptian army because he didn't want the children of Israel going back to Egypt. God will close the door because he knows our propensity to go back. And he knows our propensity to romanticize the past. You know, when you've got enough of a separation, you're like, you know, it wasn't that bad. I was only beaten a couple of times. Just had to make just a few bricks without straw. And so what? They wanted to take my baby and kill him. But you know, it wasn't that bad in Egypt. You know, because there were onions. And there was garlic and there was flavor to my food. It's not that bad. You know, just because I got food poisoning last time I ate there, let's give it a chance again. Because we romanticize and we forget the bondage, God will close the door. He closes the door. Some doors close softly, almost imperceptibly, and others are just slammed shut, locked behind. Ouch. Jacob and Laban pile stones and create a pillar of witness between them. Isn't it interesting? Jacob made a pillar when he left the promised land so he could remember and go back into the promised land. Now he makes a pillar of rocks again. But this stone pillar means no going back. Laban will not venture forward into Canaan to find Jacob, and Jacob will never return to Padan Aram. And they leave each other to the Lord with the simple greeting, Mizpah. Now, I remember in my time that people started making necklaces, and you get one side that says miss, and the other one gets the paw, and it's like two halves of a heart. Like, isn't that sweet? The Lord watch over each of us while we're absent from one another. And my dad, that would drive him crazy. He'd be like,
they don't understand miss paw. That means you dirty, rotten scandal. God's going to get you if you try anything. Like, miss paw, you scoundrel.
And that's what they were saying, literally, is like, Miss Pollock. You know, not this, but he's watching you if you try anything. And Jacob's like, you think God's watching me? He's watching you. That was what Miss Pollock means. So go ahead, get the necklace. But get it for somebody you kind of don't trust. Here, you can have the paw. I'll have the Miss. Miss paw. Jacob is saying, and Laban is saying, maybe I can't watch you, but God will get you if you try anything. Jacob couldn't safeguard himself from Laban, but he could say, you know what? I'm going to leave you to God. I am going to leave you to God. The door closed behind him, and Jacob is forced to move into Canaan. But just as he's forced into Canaan, we read in chapter 32, verses 1 and 2, that he is not alone, but the angels of God. Now that Jacob's eyes are open, like, oh my goodness, God has been with me this whole time. That's why I'm still alive. That's why Laban wasn't able to do everything he wanted to do. Now his eyes are open and he sees the angels of God, those that he had dreamed about that were going up and down the ladder into heaven at Bethel. Now they're right here, and there's a double camp. There's not only his camp, but there's another camp of angels. That, in other words, Jacob has a mobile God. These angels are not just stuck in Bethel, going up and down, which he thought, oh, this is it. This is where angels are. No, that the angels of God have been with him wherever he is. Wherever he is, so is the camp of God. So is the Lord of heaven's armies. They are with Jacob wherever he's been. The way ahead might look intimidating, dangerous, and unknown, but God's mighty force is with him. Angels are accompanying him. Jacob needs this sign because the next news he receives is daunting. Esau is on his way. Now, that would be one thing. Esau is on his way. He got your message. He's on his way. Now, Jacob had sent a message to Esau. Look, I'm coming into the land. I don't want anything from you. In fact, he had even said to his servants, tell Jacob, address him as Lord, which the word for Lord is actually Baal, can mean husband or superior. Address him as Lord and tell him that his servant, Jacob, I'm not coming back to overthrow, to supplant. I just want to come back into the land. But there's no response forthcoming. You know, I think Jacob was hoping for something like, oh, welcome. Can't wait. Let's have a party. And instead, the news is daunting. Yes, Esau got your message. He's assembled 400 men. And they're coming. Not they're coming to greet you, but they're coming. Esau with 400 men. In verse 7, we read that Jacob is greatly afraid and distressed, so he comes up with a backup plan. Isn't that just so us? Lord, I trust you, but just in case you don't come through, I've got this plan B. It'd be great if you just did a miracle, but if you're not in the mood, I've got plan B. Jacob always had a plan B. He was always going into plan B. If God doesn't give me the blessing that he's promised, I've got plan B. I'll just pretend to be Esau. If Laban cheats me, it's okay. I've got a plan B. I will strip the bark and I will, you know, make sure that I show the stripped bark and put it in the watering troughs whenever the strongest of the animals come. I've got a plan B. He's got a plan B. He divides his company into two groups. The first group, get this, is expendable. If Esau attacks the first group, the second group can escape. He's got a plan B. Go ahead, guys. You greet him first, servants, male, female, cattle, all that. Go ahead. But he's got his second group, will escape. And Jacob prays O God of my father Abraham and God of my father Isaac, the Lord who said to me, return to your country and to your kindred, and I will deal well with you. Remember, Lord, in other words, remember, Lord, this was your idea. I'm returning because you told me to return. Then Jacob prays, I am not worthy of the least of all the mercies and of all the truth which you have shown your servant, for I crossed over this Jordan. I came here with nothing, crossed over this Jordan with my staff, and now I've become two companies. Jacob is now responsible for a company of people, including wives, sons, and servants. He's now so vulnerable because of all these that are with him. Before, he wasn't vulnerable. It was just him. He could hide. He could run. He could escape. But you can't escape when you've got, like, you know, 200 people with you and animals. Yeah, well, you can't escape if you just have Barnabas with you. You can't, which is a dog. I remind you, you can't escape. He's vulnerable. There's little children. The move can't be as fast. He said, I am not worthy of the least, right? Jacob is now responsible for a company of people. God has given him this company, and Jacob is responsible to protect, safeguard, and keep. But this company is only his because of God's blessing. And then he says, deliver me, I pray, from the hand of my brother. Verse 11, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him. Here is at the issue. Here is honesty from Jacob. Lord, I'm afraid. I fear him. This is unpredictable, lest he come and attack me and the mothers of my children and my children. Remember, the last thing that Jacob heard concerning Esau was that he was filled with a murderous rage. Remember, this is Esau the hunter. This is a man that hunts, enjoys hunting, enjoys stalking animals and killing them and then eating them. It's just like finding out that, you know, I don't know, Ted Bundy has your address and wants to come by for dinner. It's just not a good proposition. It's just, and not only that, he's got 400 just like him coming. And Jacob says, I fear him. You know, I have someone in my life kind of like this, and I was just like, I understand. I put my hand on the scripture and said, Lord, I understand. I fear. But here's the ticket. David said, what time I am afraid, I will trust in the Lord. Jacob is saying, God, I don't want my fear to keep me from your will. I don't want my fear, even though it's very real, even though there are very strong possibilities that Esau is still angry, still got murderous intent, still hunting innocent bunnies, even though this is a very real possibility, I don't want my fears to keep me from your will. What Jacob is saying, I'm going forward, Lord, but I'm going forward afraid. I need you. I need you. The way forward for Jacob is ahead, but ahead looks lethal. And Jacob counts on God's promise. Here is his only comfort. For you said, I will surely treat you well and make your descendants as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude. In other words, Lord, if he kills me, it's on you, because your promises won't happen. If I go down and my sons go down, your promises cannot be fulfilled. When you are threatened, when intimidated by the enemy, it's so important to recount the promises of God. Not just the immediate promises, but the promises concerning a future and a hope. So important. The only way for Jacob is ahead. Satan's greatest weapon is intimidation, isn't it? He uses fear to keep us from going forward into all God has. You see, forward is the place of blessing. Forward, not backward. Forward. But Satan will say things like, well, you know, it's one thing if you want to risk your life, but what about your kids? Are you thinking about them? Is this healthy for them? I heard that voice when we were about to move to England. I still remember sitting on the beach at Carlsbad, and Brian was surfing with Char and with Braden. You know, I think Braden was four or five at the time, and Char was 13. And Braden could, this is what happens when your dad is a surfer. At 4 years old, Braden could stand up, and he didn't want the little shore break. He wanted to go out with his dad. He could stand up on a surfboard and stand up, do a bottom turn. He could surf at 4 years old. It was like crazy. He just had this natural ability to, he used to sneak out of the house and ride his brother's skateboard in the neighborhood. At four, I was such a great mother, I was unaware. I had to go find him, like, wait, anyone see Braden lately? What happens with your youngest is you think one of the older ones are watching them, and none of them are. They're all doing their own thing. And then you're like, wait, I'm missing one. I did that a couple times. And just truth be told. So I'd find him and he'd be skateboarding in the neighborhood. I'd be like, you're four, you're not supposed to skateboard. He ripped his chin open skateboarding. It was just, then I'm like, Lord, is it right to take my sons, I mean, I know you're calling us to London, but there's no ocean there. And they've got this identity and this affinity with, you know, the Pacific Ocean, which is tends to be warmer than the Atlantic English Ocean. Lord, and the Lord, I remember him speaking to me, saying, I will be their identity. I will be their identity. But nevertheless, it's one thing to do it. Lord, I'm willing to go. But is it right to uproot my children and take this away from them? And that was what, I remember the devil just like coming up and going, they're out surfing, let's talk. You're like, okay. You know, is it right to do it to your children? Like, I understand, you know, this is, Brian feels maybe, you know, called. But really, you're gonna do this to your kids? You're like, oh, I didn't think. You all of a sudden this fear, like, what am I doing to my children? Here is the time to pull out the personal promises of God and repeat them in prayer. God has given me a special scripture for each of my children that I pray over them again and again. It was time to pull out the promises and say, Lord, this is what you said over that one. This is what you said over this one. Had nothing to do with surfing. He crosses, he's been on the east side of the Jabbok River, which is a tributary of the Jordan River. It's one of the largest tributaries of the Jordan River. It's 50 miles north of the Dead Sea. It's one of the fullest places of the Jordan River, and it actually means luxuriant river. But once Jacob crosses the Jabbok with all of his family, with all of his servants, all of his livestock, it's going to make escape more difficult and nearly impossible. Jacob prepares an appeasement gift for his brother very quickly. Think about it. Jacob, who schemed to get the best for himself from Laban, is now willing to give the best away for peace. 200 female goats, 20 male goats, 20 ewes, 20 rams, 30 camels, you know I like the camels, 40 cows, 10 bulls, 20 donkeys, 10 foals. He instructs his servant to put some space between each of the groups, like make it look really impressive. Make it look like such a, and there's more. Not only the Ronco knives, but there's more. You answer this deal now and we will throw in 30 camels. It's an unbelievable deal. Jacob sends his family, his livestock, his servants to the west side of the Jabbok. Then he finds a place where he is all alone, has no one with him, nothing beside him. It is reminiscent of his time in Bethel when he had a rock for a pillow and he was all alone. And this time, rather than a dream, there is a man, but not just any man, that comes and wrestles with him all night long. And what a night.
Jacob seems to go from one dangerous situation to another, fleeing Laban and then reuniting with Esau. Jacob relied on God and his promise that his descendants would be as numerous as the sand of the sea. If Esau would have killed Jacob and his family, the promise could not be fulfilled. As Jacob went forward and trusted God's promise, it gave him hope concerning the future. Like Jacob, we also face uncertainty in our own lives, and the only way ahead is trusting in God and His Word. We hope you have been blessed by today's Bible study. For more information about the Gracious Words radio program and the teaching ministry of Cheryl Broderson, please visit our website at graciouswords.com. Coming up next time on the Gracious Words program, we'll look at God's blessings for Jacob as we continue our series, Our Great Creator, in the book of Genesis with Cheryl Broderson. We do hope you make plans to join us. Again, for more information, please visit our website at graciouswords.com. This program is sponsored by Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.